Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The lockdown early works continue. The work never stops, and it keeps getting earlier. Little update before we get on with this episode. If you listened to last week's episode with Charlie Cox, you will know that not only did she write detailed fanfiction of ex-BGT winner George Sampson, she also camped outside his house in real life and had his mum as a friend on Facebook and potentially even had his sister's phone number. Well, I can confirm that George Sampson himself has listened to that podcast episode. He tweeted me to tell me. He said that he loved it and he used two different crying laughing emojis. Now, you could interpret that as a positive. I choose to see it as the forced smile of a hostage. If you haven't heard it yet, do go back and listen to that episode with that information in mind. It will blow your brain off to see just how mad that must have felt for George Sampson. I can't even imagine how he reacted hearing that. He probably got all soaking wet and then did a front flip and landed on his back. Now on to this week. Today's guest is Danny Wallace, the writer, the filmmaker, the presenter, the comedian, the project man. I've been a big fan of Danny Wallace for years and years. Actually, during the period I was writing a lot of the work I read out on this show, I was reading a lot of Danny Wallace all through my teenage years. Big fan. He is responsible for classics such as Yes Man, Join Me, How to Start Your Own Country, Are You Dave Gorman? He was involved in the Mighty Boosh's early radio shows. They're doing listen-alongs to that at the moment in lockdown. They're very fun. He's written novels, columns. He's done all sorts of stuff. But it all started with illustrations for Gaelic writings, typewriter murder stories, and incredibly profound and thought-provoking poetry. Plus, we have an early work exclusive and an early work first. All will be revealed. Enjoy. On another lockdown special of early work this week, it is Danny Wallace. Hello, Danny.
Hello, Rhys.
Now, Danny Wallace, for listeners, if you don't know, is probably best known for when I attempted to become a Yes Man, because I was inspired by his book, Friends Like These. No, Yes Man. And it lasted about 3 days.
Wow.
And then I was too hungover to play tennis.
Oh, no.
With my friend. So I just thought, and it doesn't suit my personality to be a Yes. I'm known for being a no man. I don't really like to do things. You must have had loads of people who, after that book came out, be like, oh, what a great idea, I'm going to be a yes man, and then they failed immediately.
There are, weirdly, it seems like a lot of young English men, in particular English, ended up with Scandinavian women somehow through. There seemed to be a lot of letters that would end up with someone from England going to like Norway and ending up moving there. So I don't know if that is a very specific thing that the book has done, but it's like reverse Vikings, isn't it? We're sort of sending men back to take their women.
If I had to guess what you were like at school, Danny, and I do,
yeah.
What I've written is, my predictions are as follows. Projects man is the first thing I wrote. Projects man at school. crap superhero, but you know, you got a book career out of it at least. Projects man, someone who organized things, because obviously you started your own country, you started a cult. Obviously that was an accident, I do understand that, but you've started all these things, you've organized things in later life. So I think maybe you're organizing things at school, like school socials, trying to organize school trips, but always to places that were irrelevant to studying just because you wanted to go there. Like maybe like Eel Pie Island, or like a go-karting track for no real reason, saying it's educational because we're all gonna have to learn to drive at some point, etc., but teachers not falling for it. Maybe some sort of student leadership position, prefect or head boy. I can certainly imagine you giving rousing speeches, but that might just be because you've forced into my head the idea of you leading a cult. I'd say this is a bit of a weird one, but I reckon you probably led the way in a fashion item or haircut that was kind of mocked because it was different, but you'd never have noticed or cared that it was being mocked. And then I think it became a thing that everyone was doing in a couple of months, but you never got the credit. So wow. In my school, switching from everyone had satchel shoulder bags in my school, yeah. And backpacks was just the most embarrassing, lame thing. And then one boy called Luke just suddenly came in one day with like a backpack, and he wore it really high. And everyone was like, "Oh, he's got a backpack!" Ah. And then within 2 weeks, everyone had a really high backpack, and it was cool. It was having a satchel was lame. So I've put you down as being that sort of person. I mean, I don't know. Is any of that true that I just said?
It's stunningly accurate. I don't know if you want to get into the realm of, you know, psychology or psychiatry at some point, or behavioural sciences. But yes, I would say that's a 90% portrait.
Wow.
I was a prefect. I was elected senior student after a rousing speech, in which I promised everybody, because I sort of got dragged into it the last minute, but I promised everybody that the can machine where we'd get our cans of Lilt and Coke and stuff, it was 35p. But it would always take 40, and it would never give you your 5p back. And I promised people there and then that this would be my priority going forward. They cheered and whooped. And I tell you, no word of a lie, we went back to the sixth form common room, and I put my 40p in, and I got my 5p change. And I had nothing to do with
it. Wow.
But it was just, you know, it was, you know, I'm not a religious man, but God was with
That's
me that
the
day.
Sort- I mean, having read a lot of your work, that is exactly the sort of thing that happens to you. That is the sort of... You being dragged into this anyway is a yes man move. Yeah. Someone going, "Oh, should we all run for student leadership positions?" You're going, "Yeah, why not?" And then suddenly the touch of God gifts you a 5p that proves your point.
Well, but the worst thing was, like, what do I do now? Because that was my main running platform, and I'd already solved it. And, you know, I was in the job for a year. So, and you mentioned projects. Yes, absolutely. I mean, I wasn't that bothered about, you know, essays or, you know, learning in general. But if you gave me a project, that is when I would pounce. And it could be about the most boring thing in the world, and it wouldn't matter to me, because I would just put my all into it and just go for it. I remember one summer holiday, I did a voluntary project. This is how into projects I was, because our junior school burnt down. And it was gone. And then it was the summer holidays, and we didn't know if we were going to go back. In the end, we had to sit in porter cabins at a local college, which didn't help. But I wrote a whole book about the school called The Hollywell School Book. And it was just a ring binder. And it was just me. I ran out of material very quickly. There was no internet. There was nothing like that. And so I just had to talk to people and just thought, "Oh, did your son go to Hollywell School in like 1981? Can I interview him?" And it would just be just it was rubbish, but I put my all into it. And
you had, you know, a project on the go. That's
a project
point
to do.
You wanted to finish this ring binder about I'm gonna go back to it, a school that burnt down. I mean, I'm gonna need more information there.
I think it was a disgruntled former pupil.
I was gonna say, is it a suspicious burning down?
Oh, it was arson. It was arson and a half.
Oh my God!
And it was the day of the school trip. I think we were all going to Wales, maybe. And so we all get to the school to get on our coaches, and it's just a smouldering mess and firemen everywhere. And then we're driven away to Wales. So it was a very odd, very, very odd. Like, we had questions. We were like, "What? Why was the school burned down?"
The idea of all of you. Yeah. pressed up against the back window on the bus sorry, can we establish what's happening here?
And because it's our first trip away as well, it's kind of a weirdly emotional time with our parents saying goodbye to our parents, and our parents are trying to pretend everything's fine just as there is no school anymore, and they're just going, it's fine, don't worry about it, enjoy Wales, have fun. And we're like, but where do everything has changed. So I did the projects, and what was the other thing you said? Something. Oh, the fashion choice.
Sure.
I did try at one point to put my socks over my trousers. And when we were playing sport.
What do you mean? Tuck your trousers into your socks?
Yeah. And for me, it gave me a wonderful sense of freedom. There was no sort of, turn-ups flapping about, nothing like that. And I could run around. I seemed faster, more agile. It didn't catch on and led to a short but intense period of bullying.
Fantastic. Well, I'm glad I brought it up.
Yeah.
What was your creativity like at school? I mean, you said that you had that you made that project about the school that burnt down.
Yeah.
Was that your first kind of dipping the toe into the creative world, or were you writing and making things before that?
I was always writing and making things, and I think I just wanted to crack on. And there was one thing that, you know, I had two sort of strains, I suppose, to it. One was the trying to make the schoolwork fun, but then also trying to make school fun by sort of doing strange things and little pranks and sort of quite, you know, well thought out, or hopefully well thought out, sustained pranks where I was happy to wait for the punchline. So I remember a CDT, craft design and technology lesson, and we all had to come up with a new shopping center or something like that, and my friend Little Dan, who was called Little Dan because he was slightly shorter than me, he came up with a shopping center called the Pagoda. And good name for it. And he sort of worked on like a logo and all this kind of stuff. And I went away on the day that they were due in. And I wrote a letter with a logo I'd designed myself from Pagoda Shopping Centres International. And it was a legal letter threatening Little Dan with legal action if he didn't immediately rescind any and all work and reference to Pagoda shopping centres. And then I folded it up and I gave it to my teacher with a little wink, and she saw, and she then, when she was doing the register, walked around and went, you know, Little Dan, you've received a letter. And then I just watched him as he just watched 6 months of work or something just sort of disappear and fade away. And I would do little things like that. And the teachers trusted me. And they sort of enjoyed it, I think. And there was like an English exam where I finished my thing about Shakespeare or whatever. And then I decided to write another very fast essay it was complete nonsense, just under someone else's name. And then I put it under mine and handed it in so that the teacher would sort of freak out and think, why has, you know, Peter Richardson, why has he gone absolutely insane writing that, you know? And so I was always looking for like a little outlet.
Wow, these are deep, dark cut pranks. This is not the level of prank you expect from school, which is like maybe you put a fish in the ceiling or maybe you put cling film over a toilet. This is like, this is top tier stuff.
I would go for it, impressive. Yeah. But I remember once I was thinking I was in the most trouble in the world ever, because there was an old man down my street called Mr. Montgomery who used to shout at us if we played football on the street. And he had lots and lots of plants in his porch. And I made a letter with a letterhead from the Hay Fever Sufferers of the United Kingdom Unite organisation, saying that one of our representatives had been in the local area just recently and noticed that the pollen count outside his porch was far above the national average, and he had to now limit his plants to either 8 small or 6 large, or further action would be taken. And my mistake was, I thought a new level to this would be to invent, you know, the representative of the hay fever place. And so I put down my friend Simon Davies's name and his number. And that was a mistake, because Mr. Montgomery then phoned that number and spoke to Simon Davies's mum. And Simon Davies's mum seemed to get the wrong end of the stick and thought that Simon had been kidnapped or something. And this old man was wanting to speak to him, and the whole thing, and it just got out of control and it snowballed. And then she phoned me, and my stomach turned as I realised, my God, what have I done? You know, she thinks he's in danger, and in fact, I can't even explain it because it's about hay fever and flowers and the old man, and like, how do I even get my story straight? And my mum was shopping, and when she was coming back, I was like nearly in tears because I was thinking, I've really messed up here. And she came in and I went, I've done something really bad. And she was like, what? And so I start to tell her what I've told you, and thinking, well, this is it now, I'm going to jail. And I look up and she's just crying with laughter because she loved the fact that Mr. Montgomery had sort of had this pomposity pricked. So I was always trying to be creative and do weird, you know, little projects.
Can I just reiterate? Yeah. Projects, man. These pranks are projects as far as I'm concerned. They're not normal pranks. These are project level pranks. Oh, I mean, good. Sending legal notices to your classmate. How old were you at that point?
The Paragon one, I guess I'd have been maybe about 14, something like that. 14.
I mean, that is precocious to be doing that kind of legal letter stuff. To say, to be a cease and desist to your own friend at school. And then to get in touch with Mr. Montgomery to claim to be from the hay fever board of the United Kingdom. And then it all leading to a kidnap. Oh, it's absolutely absurd. It's good that your mum encouraged it, though.
She loved
it. So were you encouraged? You were encouraged with all this sort of stuff, generally.
Yeah. She when we lived in Dundee, she's got a great way of finding creative people and talking to them and seeking them out, and they're sort of quite attracted to her. And there was the first thing I ever did that made me sort of realise, oh, you can do things and then they become things, was she... I don't know how familiar you are with Gaelic poetry.
Yeah, you're going to have to educate me somewhat.
No problem. Well, there was a Gaelic poet called Katrina that my mum knew, and her daughter Ailey became a really close friend of mine. And Katrina was writing a whole new book of Gaelic poetry and asked me to illustrate them. And so I was like, this is incredible. This is the best thing in the world. I must have been like 5 or 6, maybe. And so I start drawing all these drawings, but I'm having to have them translated because I don't know really what they're about. It turns out, now, years later, because I tracked down some of them and Ailey sent me the actual illustrations that I'd done that were never published in the end because I'd used too many colours. It was prohibitively expensive. It would have been just impossible. They were more looking for like black and white outlines, and I was like, Technicolor. So I learned a valuable lesson there about printing costs. So I did all these drawings, and Ailey sent them to me the other day. And some of them are actually about me and my cat. And the great thing is that it's all in Gaelic, apart from my cat's name. My cat's name was something I didn't realise growing up was probably not a good name for a cat. We'd inherited the cat from a German family called the Grabollers, who were going back to Germany, and they wanted to leave their cat here. So I don't know whether they named the cat or my mum named the cat, but my mum is Swiss, and, you know, so perhaps she was just literally thinking, well, this is a cat and it's a fella. So that's how I ended up with a cat called Pussy Man. and so you get these Gaelic poets and poems, and it's all like in Gaelic apart from the word pussy man. So from an outsider's point of view, a non-Gaelic speakers, you know, you don't really know what these are about. But
yeah,
I did them.
You've got an inkling. You'd read those poems thinking, well, this must be about some sort of stag do.
Well, exactly. I've just sent them to you while we've been speaking, so you can have a look at they're sort of. I think I was going for like a childish, almost naive sense of art.
Oh, these are very colourful for a start. So I can see the printing issues.
Yeah.
They look like what you get on a t-shirt now from an expensive brand.
Thank you, Reese. There's hundreds of these.
Picture two that you've sent me. Is this an abduction happening or is this a spotlight? I'm trying to figure it out.
Let me check.
So I'm looking at what looks like potentially either a lamp on a small boy being interrogated by a woman on her knees, or an alien abduction from a spaceship.
I believe this is in reference to a small elf that Ailey believed visited her at night. In the, you know, if you're a Gaelic speaker, the poem begins, Bi elf biodac tigini... well, actually, I can't read them. I can't read Gaelic or get any of the pronunciations correct. But I hope that gave you a flavour. So I think that was Ailey and her elf visitor.
And you illustrated it with a massive chair. To, yep. Is that to represent quite how small this elf is?
It's for scale.
It's for scale, yeah. And then going back to picture one, yeah. Is that, do I see Pussy Man there?
Oh, no, that's a rabbit.
Okay, I thought it might be a rabbit. It might be Pussy Man. Didn't want to make assumptions.
Yeah, it's a rabbit. Or in Gaelic, it says rabaid.
Rabaid.
But I'm certain I can source you an illustration of Pussy Man for sure.
Please, if you wouldn't mind.
I don't know if you'd like a podcast exclusive.
At last, a podcast exclusive. I've been waiting several episodes for this.
Well, you haven't been waiting for this news as long as I have, because this book was obviously lost to the mists of time. I thought, well, that's it. I tried it. And we're talking, 35, 36 years ago. So anyway, Ailey, when she was sending me these pictures, she said, before COVID-19 erupted, I mentioned to the Gaelic Books Council that this book existed. They seem quite excited about it with a view of finally publishing it.
Oh, my God. Incredible.
So, she said, is this something that would have your support? And I was like, well, of course. Well, of course it would.
Of course. Of course it would. And if it's... So what was the reason you got in touch with her about this poetry?
I think she had... I said... I remembered this. And I said, I'm going on Rhys James's Early Work podcast. And I would be very interested in seeing those illustrations again, should you happen to have them. So she found the book... She found them all. She took all the pictures, and she'd mentioned to the Gaelic Books Council, and they're all over it. So hopefully,
so early fingers crossed, work is potentially the reason that this book is going to be published.
Yes,
it's the impetus for an actual publication.
I believe so.
I cannot believe it.
Yeah. My earliest work may now be published by the Gaelic Book Council, thanks to your endeavours.
Okay, right, Danny, I think I'm about ready. I think I've processed enough. I think I'm about ready to be able to handle this thing you wrote on a typewriter, this very earnest and serious thing. What is it? What are we talking? What sort of genre?
It's the murder genre.
Oh, thank God for that.
But it seems like I've gone straight to the top because I've underlined it using the little dashes. So that's a lot more dashes than just, And it's called The Ultimate Murder.
Oh, right. It's really put a full stop on the genre.
Yeah. And I can already tell that I didn't really plan this out. I think I must have just started and just typing. But
that's the problem with a typewriter, isn't it? You sort of have to commit to whatever you've started with.
Yeah, otherwise, you've got... there are a couple of things that are tip-exed, so obviously I thought, this is good, let's keep this going. Okay. But aside from that, no. And I appear to have taken on the persona of much older man.
How much old are we talking?
Well, I don't know. I mean, the first line will tell you. Do you want me to do a bit?
Yes, please, I would love to.
This... was the last case in my police career. So obviously, we're thinking, I don't know, obviously that's clever, right? Because already we know this guy's 50s, maybe, grizzled.
Yeah, he's retired. It already sounds like a he was just one day from retirement type story. Yeah.
And he got dragged in, didn't he? I was travelling down a mysterious country lane. There was something particularly strange. A fox shot out in front of my car. Pheasants leapt into the air. And there was a sinister feeling as the cool evening breeze swept my face. He's in a car, though, isn't he?
So this is a convertible, presumably?
It's either a convertible or he's got the aircon on, or maybe the window down. But then
a cool evening breeze through the aircon swept my face as pheasants leapt into the air.
That's true. There was a small click on the dashboard. I turned my head towards it. The petrol gauge was empty. That's bad planning. And the car was stationary. Okay. So it just immediately stopped. The car just stopped. Yeah, or it had stopped.
That's such a kid's view of how cars work, isn't it? It's just like, well, if you get to empty, it's over. Game over.
It stops.
There's no warning before that. Because it clicked. That's the first warning. It's over. It's done. You're stopped. And this is a bear in mind, someone at the top of their game in the police.
Yeah. Yeah. Very experienced, you know. This was the last case.
God forbid this guy has to turn the siren on ever. He's got to go catch a crook. Siren on. Oh, sorry, I haven't put any petrol in it.
Exactly. I walked the few miles to the nearest petrol station. Here, I collected the petrol. I was offered a lift by the middle-aged attendant who was closing for the night. I thanked him and accepted. I climbed into the truck. So there's a lot of... I'm explaining a lot here. And set off down the small lane leading away from the station. But instead of taking the country lane, which I first came across, he took another road. When I inquired why this was, he replied that we were taking a shortcut. So that's just part one.
Yeah, I'm already suspicious. I'm suspicious of what's going to happen and whether it really is a shortcut, mainly because the title of the piece is The Ultimate Murder.
Yeah.
So, maybe I'm wrong, but those short, sharp sentences, very just descriptive, very information-based, surely that is the writing style of a character. That's a police chief way of talking. It's just tell us the events. We just need to know the events.
Yeah. So you got out of the truck, then you got some petrol at the petrol station, then you got in the truck and you drove away from the petrol station.
And it's even like a police description, the middle-aged attendant offered me a lift.
Exactly.
He was 5'9". He had dark hair. His registration number was this.
Well, exactly. I mean, I won't do the whole thing because you will slit your wrists. But, it turns out that...
And if I do slit my wrists, maybe that would be the ultimate murder.
This has all been leading up to that. It's one of those urban myths where if you read this story out, the reader ends up dead. Anyway, it turns out the petrol attendant has a gun. He points the gun at our man. He says, I immediately knew there was something wrong, which you would because he's got a gun. He smiled wickedly at the expression on my face. And it turns out that our hero had arrested the parking attendant, the petrol station man's younger brother, who got 15 years for gold bullion stealing when he was head of the operation. And so they end up going to this old mansion, and he manages to break free from whatever they've done to him and the blindfold. And he looks in a drawer and he finds a phone, which is not where landlines are kept, in drawers. But he manages to alert Scotland Yard because he looks down and he sees there's a dead old man. And that's the story. I was later picked... It finishes very powerfully. I was later picked up and congratulated by my colleagues at the CID. The dead man was identified as G. Dewhurst, a wealthy businessman whose money could have bought many guns/weapons. And there it ends.
It is written like a police case report.
Yeah, I think I channeled it. It was very...
It must have been. It seems like a choice. It seems you've opened by saying it was my last case in the police.
Yeah.
I think it must have been. How old were you when you wrote this?
I probably was about... okay, so that would have been in Loughborough with the typewriter. I'd have been 11 or 12. Maybe 11.
If you're 11, what are you talking about? Gold? What was the crime that his brother had committed?
Gold bullion stealing. I was watching Sunday nights in those days. You would have a bath, a cup of hot chocolate, and then you'd watch Morse or one of the old detective things, or Agatha Christie. So I'm guessing that was a Sunday influenced. All the shops were shut. There's nothing to do. It was Loughborough. Morse was on later. Let's write a quick story about a dead man called G. Dewhurst.
G. Dewhurst, again, is such a mad name to come up with as an 11-year-old.
Why didn't I write George or, Jerry? Yeah. Or give him his full name at least. Who's that
thing
dead
is,
man?
Knowing the other
G.
stuff
Dewhurst.
You're up to at that age, it doesn't surprise me. I like that he pointed a gun at you, and that's when you immediately knew something was wrong. And it's that kind of biting perception that gets you to the top of the police force.
It does.
Unless you can identify that something's wrong when a man's got a gun pointed in your face, you will not make it as chief of police.
Yeah, absolutely.
It really checks out character-wise. I mean, it's great stuff. Is it a mystery, would you say?
I seem to have solved it within maybe 350 words. So I think it's more just regard it as a moment of mysterious atmosphere.
It's just a murder description, really.
It is.
It's powerful. It's powerful stuff. And remind me, the ending is that an old man has been found dead and he is wealthy, G. Dewhurst. He's wealthy enough to have bought many guns and weapons.
Yes. Yeah, he could have bought many guns and weapons, or guns slash weapons. So swords, bazookas.
What's the significance of... I mean, I understand that obviously we're in a murder plot and this man had a gun who took you to this mansion.
So I think that the petrol station attendant, who must have somehow known that our hero, our nameless hero, might at some point have run out of petrol, he inveigled his way into the petrol station community and he waited 15 years for the policeman to run out of petrol so that he could put him in the truck, take him on a shortcut to an old mansion where he could blindfold him and show him where there was a dead old man. And the dead old man, obviously, he's into, I guess, weapons trading, illegal arms sales in this old mansion, which chimes, I suppose, with the kind of criminal that might get into gold bullion stealing. And all I can imagine is that all of this money, this gold bullion, and this wealthy old man, G. Dewhurst, they were coming up with a nefarious plot to perhaps fund... I would say probably the Libyans, because they were the only people I would have known at the time because of Back to the Future. So this would have been... So this guy, he single-handedly stopped a plot to fund Libya.
But it's so hard to understand where
it's
this...
It's very simple.
It's so hard to understand what side this petrol... This guy who works in the petrol station, where's he coming from here? Because I understand he wants revenge, but also he's exposing this arms dealer.
Yeah.
But what's his motive here? Also, after 14 years of selling Ginster's pasty after Ginster's pasty to people not relevant to his pursuit of this fake petrol station job, he must have thought, I don't know if this is going to happen.
Well, no, absolutely. I mean, but that's the thing about the criminal mind, as I've discovered when I was writing The Ultimate Murder. The criminal mind is patient. They will wait to pounce. And so 15 years in not even probably like... an Esso or a BP, but probably like one of those little country lane ones. Because remember, this is not on an A road. It's not even a B road. These are country lanes we're talking about. So, I mean, you don't get much traffic anyway. They probably wouldn't have had a telly in there. He'd have just had radio to listen to, if that. So these are long, long days. And this is happening at night as well. So there's much less whatever the car equivalent of footfall is. And finally, it pays off. And so he just closes up, get in the truck, come this way, there's a mansion there, and here's my gun. And but in that classic way that all criminals do, they blindfold the hero, but then they leave him in a room, and he's able to take the blindfold off, it says here, by banging my head on broken furniture. So he does that, and then he gets out. The door finally gives way. I began to look for clues. I don't know why he's looking for clues, for I knew something was going on. I found a small study, which had a tiny patch of blood on the floor, leading towards a small door. So obviously you're going to follow that, right? And that is when he finds the old man. And he phones up Scotland Yard for backup on the situation. And then the police arrive in seconds. And there's a small...
Well, they're already there.
Yeah. Big, burly policeman bursts through the door as the murderers try to get away. So, you know, I jumped about a bit, but I gave you the flavour.
I appreciate all the... What you've done in the retelling of this is the start and the end, and then we've had to fill in the gaps.
Yeah.
Because, to be honest, I was at an absolute loss for what the fuck was going on. But now I know. Now I completely understand. I understand all the motives.
Yeah.
Did you show anyone this? Did you read this to parents or anyone?
I haven't seen it myself until today. So I don't think so. I would have shown it to Mum. It's, it's A5 paper and it's two pages of closely typed. But please don't get any tips from this about how to commit the ultimate murder, because I think my intention was to show that murder was wrong. And that
that doesn't come across.
Oh, right. Well, they get arrested. him and his henchmen.
Yeah, but I don't know if we're on the policeman's side, to be honest. Well, I'm quite on board with the petrol man.
He's not going back to the petrol station tonight, I'll tell you that. He's in for a cold, hard night on the cold, hard stones of his local jail.
That's probably a welcome relief after 14 years in a fucking garage on the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, I would think so.
So just to clarify, because I know that you want listeners to know, you don't want any issues off the back of this podcast.
Please.
You want to clarify, murder is bad. Your position is murder is bad.
Yeah, it's against the law, and there it should remain.
Just to clarify, these are the opinions of Danny Wallace, not necessarily the opinions of me or anyone involved with Radio
sure,
X.
Sure.
Other than Danny Wallace. So you said you also wrote poems as
yes.
well as murder-based sort of stories and descriptions.
Yeah.
What sort of poems were you writing?
Obviously poems about my life, about my cat, poems about bluebells, because... I thought that's what you had to do. If you're a poet, you would, you know, there are bluebells around, and so you would write a little ode to the bluebell.
Were you studying poets at school at this stage?
I don't think so. I think, I've just looked and I've just found a poem I wrote for Pussy Man.
a poem for Pussy Man?
Yeah, after his untimely death. This one just goes, Pussy Man, oh Pussy Man. We'll never forget you. Jumping through windows in the dead of night, hungry for evermore. Wandering happily around Richmond Terrace and Spinney Hill Drive. Sitting on walls. Keeping us happy. And now, cold and still. And that was on the 29th of June, 1988.
No way is that the ending. No way is that how it ends.
Yeah, it just goes, but you're dead. Anyway, there you go. Thank you.
Can I just say, imagine someone who doesn't know the backstory finding that pussy man, sitting on walls and now cold and still.
Just cold and dead.
Oh my God. What an absolutely insane ending that is. Presumably you didn't read that at the wake of Pussy Man.
No, I didn't. But we did have, there was a vicar down the road called Brian. And when Pussy Man passed, he came and said a few words in the back garden. In his, you know, his dog collar, and we said goodbye to Pussy Man, and then we walked outside, and I saw something I'd never seen before, and have never seen since, but something that will never leave me, which was two dogs stuck together by their bottoms, and I couldn't work it out. It was a two-headed dog. They were stuck. They'd been trying to do something, and something had gone very wrong. But luckily, I was with a vicar, and I didn't know. And he was a grown-up, and so Brian just clapped his hands together very fast, and the two dogs ran in different directions, and some kind of explosion of juices went into the air, and I was looking at Brian like, well, A, it was looked like a miracle. Because a vicar had done it, and it was some weird, you know, I'd been looking at Greek mythology around that time and like griffins and weird animals all stuck together. And so I think I thought it must be like a Loughborough version of that. And then Brian performed the miracle and they went. And I wanted to say, why were they, what was that? But he couldn't get out there fast enough, I think. And I still don't really understand what happened.
I mean, it's so profound that and poetic that... Upon leaving your cat's funeral, you see what I would call the circle of life is two dogs stuck together and then scattering away from each other.
Yeah,
it couldn't be more perfect. Orchestrated by some sort of vicar, claiming to be a vicar, wearing his own dog collar.
Yeah, at a cat's funeral.
At a cat's funeral. Quite insulting, to be fair. I mean, that's absolutely absurd. But... and so did the vicar have to say Pussy Man during the eulogy?
Yeah, I think it's the first and last time he'd have said that. It was a cat and it was a bloke. And so it just made sense in our family. It was only years later at university when we, you know, you do that drinking game, which is, the porn star name. And it has to be like your first pet. It was only then that I realised that's actually quite a weird name for a cat, and yet it works for this game.
Oh, it's the perfect porn star name. Yeah, your cat already has done the porn star name game by accident. This might be too personal a question, but often with sort of things like online banking and stuff like that, your secret question has to be your first pet's name.
Yeah.
Now, if you have to phone your bank and they say, we need your first pet's name so that we can get into your account, do you have to say Pussy Man, and then do you get into a beef with a bank teller?
No, I use... I'm not going to tell you what I use.
Is it your grandma's maiden name by any chance?
I was literally about to go, no, do you know what I do use? I use... And then I thought, this is the wrong thing to do, isn't it? Is this what this is all about? This entire thing is to
lull
people...
There's no podcast, mate. Yeah. There's no such thing as this podcast.
Exactly, there's nobody recording.
It's the ultimate murder. Okay, cool. Great. Any other poems?
I've got one short one here. I'll save one for the end, but this is a... it's simply called Race. Race. Is it all just about your face? So that was Race.
Oh my God.
Which would have been around the time, you know, of apartheid and Mandela. I found my diary from that time as well. And it's you know, I'm very happy about Mandela coming out. And I also wonder, you know, when are we all going to stop fighting, guys?
To be fair, yeah. I mean, if you're writing stuff as powerful and hard-hitting as Race, is it all just about your face?
Yeah.
Then I can see that you're clearly an activist.
Yeah. I think that something obviously affected me at that stage, and I was looking at the futility of racism, the futility of the endless battles we seem to get into, all based, as far as I could see, on just visual cues, you know? Get over it. Get over it. Be like a murder detective in a room, and you know, take that blindfold off and see people for what they are. If you have to bang your head against furniture to do it, but get it done.
Do you remember a while ago there was a billboard campaign that said, some people are gay, get over it? Do you remember that? All it said was, some people are gay, get over it. Now. And I don't know if you remember, but that solved homophobia.
It was around that time, yeah.
If only you had paid for some billboards when you wrote that. Race, is it all just about your face?
Be a very
There'd
different
be
world.
No issues of no, racism in this country different. Anymore?
Absolutely.
Okay, well, it comes to the time where I must score your work.
Yes.
So I'm very glad you included that.
Good.
So I score it on three categories. Yep. As you know, those categories are originality, pure teen horniness, and Mickey Mouse Club, Ryan Gosling, Ryan Goose score. How close is it to your work now? How much does it represent the future star you went on to become? So first of all, originality. Look, it's very difficult to say anything other than a straight 5 out of 5 for originality.
Great.
Because
absolutely.
It's it's a murder mystery that is written in a way unlike any murder mystery I've ever read before, where it's extremely just information-based, descriptive, then I did this type stuff that is written, I think, intentionally in the style of a police report, because that's all this policeman knows.
Yeah.
He doesn't know how to word anything. That's how he tells every anecdote to his wife. Then I had dinner. It was fine.
Not a word wasted. Very sparse prose.
Exactly. And that continues into all of your poetry, actually.
Thank you.
Not a word wasted, syllables considered. You're not fucking about with describing, sadly, Pussy Man passed and we will mourn his death for years to come. It's just cold and still. Now, cold and still.
Yeah.
It is after someone who wrote a thing called The Ultimate Murder, writing now cold and still about your beloved pet, really shows the sort of, you know, I mean, it's so brutal. It's brutalist writing, and I do respect it.
It's, you know, it's a reflection of reality, isn't it?
And then taking that form, that way of writing, that, you know, considering your word count and your syllables, and then turning it into something so profound, and there's something that asks so many more questions and opens us up to use the words, while you use so few with Race, is it all just about your face?
Thank you.
I mean, it really shows an extension of that form. I don't know if that is chronological and that was the last one of those pieces, but it seems like it, because it seems like you've grown enough to be able to write something as powerful as Race, is all just about your face.
And you want people to close the poetry book and think for a bit, you know? So you have a lot of stuff about bluebells and dead cats, and then, hey, this is what it's all been leading up to. Shut the book, shut your eyes, and open your mind.
5 out of 5 for originality. Pure teen horniness. Never really heard anything less horny in my life than those three things.
Good.
The race is all just about your face. I can't really see anywhere that's going in terms of horniness. No. The cat one, I mean, just describing your own cat's death is just cold and still. It's the least sexual thing in the world. Yeah. And so it should be. It should be the least sexual thing. And then the murder one is so just descriptive and plain. It's like, okay, we're down a country lane and I'm with this bloke who works in a petrol station who's not seen civilization for weeks. Oh, what's going to happen here? Nothing. A gun in my face. And then we go to a mansion.
Yeah.
So it's got to be a zero. Mickey Mouse Club. How close is it to your work now? Does it show the potential of a future star? Well, I'm going to give you some points anyway for the pranks.
Good.
Because those represent project behavior, which has continued. A lot of projects, a lot of like experiments, stuff like that going on. So there's a couple of points for that. Writing wise, I don't know. Would you consider yourself writing short, sharp sentences? I don't know.
You know,
I don't know if you do really.
It's something I've tried to go back to. Take stuff out, get it down, get rid of the, you know, so perhaps this was a lesson from the past to the future. It's the 11-year-old me saying to the 43-year-old me, you know, get back to some of this stuff, you know, this is writing, this is pure.
It's editing, it's just telling you to edit, that's all it is. But also, the race one asks such a big question, and I think Yes Man asks a big question as well. Are we all too negative? Are we all too scared to have no experiences? Race, is it all just about your face?
Well,
so with that big question in mind, I'd say I'm going to give you a 4.
Okay.
4 out of 5 for Mickey Mouse Club. So that is a 9 out of 15 score, very respectable score.
Oh, well, good. I'm pleased because I feel seen for the first time. You know, I feel validated and I feel it was all worth it now.
Now we get to the point where I must read you some of my work.
Lovely.
To level the playing field. Yeah. It's only fair. So normally it's poems, but on this occasion, because I read your column for so many years, I decided to bring you a column of my own from a school newspaper that I wrote for and also co-created called Student Sketch. There's
lovely.
The front cover.
There is. Look at that. It's promising.
On Skype.
5 ways to save the world.
I'll post a picture of it. I didn't write that one.
No.
But just if you want to know. So the front cover, it says Student Sketch. It's got an illustration. I can't remember who did that. The lead article is 5 ways to save the world. What we've got on the front cover, it says, just so you know how hard-hitting this sort of stuff was, the articles trailed on the front cover are The Truth About AIDS.
Oh, wow. wow. And that was broken by Student Sketch.
Yeah, this is a sixth form newspaper, sort of magazine. It was meant to be like The Economist. We had The Economist in our common room, so everyone wanted to write that sort of stuff.
Oh,
but then it was a mix because other people wanted to write stuff for like GQ. So The Truth About AIDS, We Want Candy, which is my article, which
very
will
nice.
Become clear.
Okay.
So straight from The Truth About AIDS to Pro-Ev versus FIFA.
Oh.
Video game violence, The Big Bang Explored. But other examples of the mix between hard-hitting and all over the place include, this is by the same author, Define Blairism, Tendency to Not Know When to Stand Down was one of the headlines.
Wow.
And then on the next page, Crazy Frog Hits Indonesia.
Yeah.
So that's the sort of level of stuff.
Yeah, it's a very it's a very broad ranging kind of read, isn't it? It's a read for generalists. It's like it's like The Week or something.
Something for no one is what we'd call it. Exactly, yeah. My article is called We Want Candy, and that's because we went to our first sixth form social.
Yeah.
So I was in year 12, and so year 12 and year 13 suddenly have to become mates, even though they're not, because they're in the same common room. And we went on a social to a place called Candy Bar. Candy spelled K-A-N-D-I.
Clever.
So you know it's cool.
Yeah.
So I wrote a sort of what I thought was a column, a funny column about it. I'll read you some highlights of it now.
Yeah.
I hate it. Ever since we horrible year 12s bombarded the common room with litter, bad breath and chavvy anecdotes about shopping trolley stealing and other semi-illegal activities on induction day, the stench of tension has leered every time that balcony door swings open.
Wow.
There's a lot in this newspaper about chavs, actually, so
is
that was
it?
Clearly a word of the time.
Yeah.
Again, a different era. A social divide to rival that of Tottenham and Arsenal, Gordon Brown and David Cameron, and even the maths block hostility between which teacher can name pi to the most decimal places. Rumour has it that's why Levy left. Levy was Mrs. Levy. She was a maths teacher who had just left because she moved to a different school.
Ah.
I decided to take a jab at her now that she couldn't defend herself because she had got...
I thought she was someone who was always leaving, so you called her Old Levy.
Old Levy, classic Levy.
Oh, she's back, is she? Oh, she's gone again.
Despite the community spirit of sixth form, we were all conned into believing each circle of friends has been sealed tightly within their circumference, fresh air condemned, ancient freedoms denied, eye contact strictly prohibited. While Tottenham and Arsenal may riot until Gordon Brown appears mildly attractive. I mean, what is that? There's no
that.
Need for that.
That's so unnecessary.
So it's all that sort of stuff. And then it's sort of leading to... We all find our social standing throughout sixth form. We've all found out exactly where we stand, who's friends with who, because it's been a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And then it gets into where it gets complicated. And that's all because of the way that the buses were organised for this trip to Candy Bar. We all thought that was like a Division 1, Division 2, Division 3 vibe socially. And it kicked off. So having been previously anticipated as a trip to a sweet shop... That's pretty clever.
There you go.
The sixth form social at Candy Bar was set to be an evening of excitement. Everyone was well buzzing. Beef was loud and all bloods were seen to be safe with each other. I would have thought that was amazing. I would have thought that was so funny. I mean, it's one of the worst pieces of writing I've ever seen.
And it sounds like this is quite a kind of a cool rough and tumble school full of sort of like gangsters and bad boys that you went to.
Yeah, but you, having spoken to me for even an hour, you know, you can tell that's not true. Mr. Saunders, head of sixth form, you can stop worrying about graffiti in the common room, top buttons being done up, shirts untucked, and even upper school bullying. In fact, you could stop dreading violence altogether. Forget your drugs, driving, and drinking woes towards your students, because no issue will ever compare to that time Nikki stuck up the stuff about the coaches. And then it's all just stuff about the elite substitutes and reserves were in numerical order, transfers made and names crossed off. The coaches became the talk of the common room, smothered whispers that eventually turned Chinese. That's about Chinese whispers.
I got it.
And ended up as a coach three being previously known as elite. Oh, wait, Nikki just swapped the numbers. So what happened is, I mean, it's not an amazing story, but basically there was 1, 2, 3. People started going, oh, we want Dean in R1. Put him in... Division 1, so that was the transfers. And then it was so controversial, Nikki just went, okay, fine, just crossed out the number 1 and put 3 to try and trick everyone into thinking, see, they're not in any order. They obviously were in an order.
And this, this really bugged you.
Oh, this was a big deal. This was a big deal. So we get to, surprisingly, the ghetto we stood in, parked conveniently next to Iceland, lacked the violence and hostility of a Tottenham versus Arsenal aftermath. There was no dirty politics. However, those that originally did appear as Gordon Brown doppelgangers had a glossy tint gifted by intoxication. I mean, obsessed with this slamming Gordon Brown's appearance vibe.
Very political. Very political. You've managed to bring politics in a way I haven't really seen before when, you know, talking about student buses.
So as a columnist, I thought I'd read that to you.
It's great. You know, it's not snide. What is it? It's a wry glance at an unusually and oft ignored element of kind of student politics and social politics and interaction, almost classism. But you've managed to reflect the times as well by bringing in outside influences such as, you know, political leaders of the time. And it's no holds barred. That could easily have been Toby Young.
Just what I wanted to hear.
and you know, you shoot from the hip. And that's just you.
Now, I need you to score me for this work that I've just presented to you on those three categories again. So the first one out of 5 is originality.
You did 2 Gordon Brown jokes, 2 Gordon Brown references, when perhaps your point could have been made more strongly had you just done it the once. But you loved it. And you went back to it. And sometimes we go back to the things we love, don't we? And there's nothing wrong with it. But you sort of ripped yourself off within the space of one article. So originality comes down a little bit there. But where you do score highly on originality is no one else was writing about this. No one else cared.
Good point.
There is not another article about it in existence. So 4 out of 5.
Sure. I'll take that, given how lifted the writing style is from various people. Yeah, fair enough. Pure teen horniness.
Well, you mention the the glossy nature of the intoxicated students, and that shows a keen eye on physicality. So I would say that's up there. You mentioned the drinking. You're raising your eyebrows well, and you're being slightly kind of. I feel like this is peacocking in a way. You're using a lot of, you know, language that you wouldn't normally use, and that might be to impress. So I'm going to, I read between the lines, and I'm giving you 5 for that.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Oh, it's so horny, this article, without directly saying, no one got off with me at this party and now I'm angry about it.
Yeah, exactly.
That's exactly what it is. And that is what makes it a Toby Young article. Finally, it's Mickey Mouse Club, Ryan Gosling, Ryan Goose score. How close is it to the work now? Does it represent who I've gone on to be?
I'm going to mark you lower on this one, just because I think that the awareness you show shows that you have grown as a person. You've become much less horny, and well done on that. So I would say,
thank you. It's been a battle.
I'm gonna score you a 2 on that bit.
2 out of 5. Yeah, I suppose I don't really. I've got no work that's close to that candy bar.
No.
I've not talked about it since.
Yeah.
This is the first time I've mentioned candy bar ever since. So I think I'll take a 2. So that means that my score is 11.
Very good.
Out of 15. So 11 plays to 9. So technically I win the podcast, but there are no winners. The message of this is we are both losers. That is the whole point.
Yeah.
So we now come to the time where all that's left is for you to play us out, Danny Wallace, with your final piece. I believe it's another hard-hitting piece of poetry, is that correct?
Yeah, it will, you know, it's about unity, I think. None of these seem to be particularly titled apart from race. But this does, it treads a similar line, but it also exposes a lack of knowledge when it comes to geography, I think. but it's this is simply what it's about. I haven't titled it. Let's just call it People. Afghanistan's, Jerusalem's, Canadians too. Out of the trillions, these are just a few. Australians, Americans, Ethiopians too. From Japanese to Chinese to me and you. There you are.
Wow. So that is some meaningful stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it begins Afghanistan's, and rather than like Afghans,
yep.
You know, it moves straight on to Jerusalem's.
Jerusalem's, yeah.
Yeah, which isn't a people.
Lambs.
Yeah.
It's about lambs from Jerusalem.
Canadians.
Then,
yeah, bring it back and make it more. You know, because you would have been watching more American and Canadian TV. But I didn't go for the obvious. I didn't go for Americans. I went for Canadians, you know?
Yeah.
Original.
Yeah.
Out of the trillions, well, I didn't know,
no.
I didn't know how many people there were. But I am correct in saying these are just a few of them. And then Australians, Americans, very familiar with them. But then I chuck in Ethiopians, again, to demonstrate a knowledge of the world. And from Japanese to Chinese, I think that's just for rhythm. Up to me and you. So then I bring you in and make you realise, God, yeah, I am. Yeah, I am part of the world, and so are all these different people, even though they live in, you know, other places.
The last line it really rules out this poem being read by anyone from Afghanistan, Canada, Australia, America, Ethiopia.
That's true.
No one, Jerusalem. Yeah. And no one from those places can read this, because it's even Japan and China. So that's a majority of the world you've ruled out, really.
Yeah, but don't forget, I do make the point, there are trillions of people.
I see.
It's still a big market.
There it was, Danny Wallace. Hay fever pranks with Mr. Montgomery. Cease and desist letters to his own friend to stop using the name Pagoda. I had an image in my head when he said that of Joe Lycett changing his name to Pagoda to defend Little Dan, who had been ruthlessly pranked by Danny Wallace. But what about the work and the exclusive, the early work, this very podcast you are listening to now may have led to the publication of some actual poetry. And what a stab in the back that it isn't my own. Gaelic poetry from Ailey with illustrations from a five-year-old Danny may get a publication as a direct result of Danny Wallace getting in touch about this show and reminding her that it exists. A single tear rolls down my cheek out of pure pride. Make sure to follow Danny Wallace on Twitter at Danny Wallace. Subscribe to this podcast. Give us a review on your app of choice if you like. Tell your friends and go and spend several minutes now pondering if race is indeed all about your face. Goodbye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.